Mr. Ducheneau, it's so nice to visit with you. Thank you for joining us today. We are recording. You've been FSA administrator for almost 2 months now. How are things going?
Well, I started on February 22nd, so I'm just about done with 6 weeks by my calculation. Things are going really fast, but I really love the job. The analogy, drinking water from a fire hose, has been appropriately used a lot of times, but I feel like I'm kind of getting my feet under me, and I don't feel so much like I'm a drag on all of the highly qualified career staff we've got at headquarters in D.C. and the state and county staff that I have to call and pester to figure out what's going on.
So for the folks who don't know, you are a South Dakota native, and you are a rancher, right? Tell us a little bit more about your farming background and your involvement in the ag industry before joining FSA as the administrator.
That's correct. I am a member of the Cheyenne River Sioux Reservation, and we're out there west of the Missouri River. My background is in the livestock industry. My family raises beef cattle and quarter horses. We've been doing that ever since I was a little guy, and my dad bought the place from my grandpa. So we're a third generation outfit transitioning into the fourth generation with my kids and the kids of my brothers.
So have you been to Washington, D.C. yet to work, or are you working remotely?
Mostly remote work so far. I am actually in D.C. for a few days this week, scouting the housing situation, getting engaged with the headquarters staff on a couple of big pieces that are moving, and headed back to South Dakota for virtual work tomorrow afternoon.
How do you think being a rancher impacts your perspective stepping into this role?
That's a really good question. I've noticed, as a cattle rancher that's really not into the crop side of agriculture, that there's a chance for some parity or more equitable treatment for our livestock industries in our safety net and disaster programs. Up until a couple farm bills ago, there were really no standing disaster programs for the livestock industry. Congress has saw fit to change that a little bit, and I think that with some proper input from stakeholders, we may be able to craft better solutions. Of course, the long-term solution for all of this is to find a way to get more of that food dollar back to all of our producers. The reality that we live in that has most of our ag producers making a portion of their income off the farm is something that President Biden and Secretary Vilsack are both very concerned about, and I look forward to helping to build solutions to that in the future.
I think the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program tried to do that. USDA has updated its COVID program, so it's no longer called CFAP, called PAP. You know what I'm talking about, all those acronyms, because there's a lot. But I wonder, how is that going? How is the implementation of these direct payments to producers, livestock producers?
It's going pretty well, and the acronyms is a running joke within and without the department. Shortly after I got here, I got an 18-page list of acronyms, and the very next document I looked at had one that wasn't on there. So this is the Pandemic Assistance for Producers Initiative. When the new administration came in, we examined what was going on with CFAP and CFAP 2 specifically, and paused because we wanted to make sure that we were meeting the new administration's initiatives of equity and recovery. We identified some gaps. So as a result, we put everything on hold for a little bit. And now we're starting to roll those out. And the secretary announced in March that we kind of wanted to highlight the $6 billion in other products that we were going to try to find a way to get some support out there for. And we've been holding stakeholder meetings ever since, trying to get input from specialty crop groups, from the biofuels folks, from timber, all of the people that really didn't get adequately considered in the first couple rounds of what was then CFAP. Also, part of that press conference, the secretary announced the top-up payments for row crop and the livestock industry. So, to your question, the livestock industry top-up payments have all went out the door now, with the exception of a couple of really complex cases. And what I've heard from the producers out there in the field is it was welcome. The low burden on them was exceptionally welcome. The payment just happened. They didn't have to come in and reapply. We just went with their existing data and sent out an additional payment.
I remember reading some feedback from some livestock groups that did express concern about the payment limits on this. What would you tell them about the, you know, why USDA moved forward, if you know, the way that they did to not address payment limits?
So the payment limits, it depends. There's a significant crowd that are for payment limits, and there's a significant crowd that don't want any payment limits. Those that don't want any payment limits want everybody to know that the large producers experience the same economic hardships as the smaller producers. Those that are in favor of limiting those payments really have a concern about the perception, where agriculture might get a black eye if we have ag producers that are getting $1 million, $1.5 million payments. So we're trying to balance all interests here and provide a more equitable suite of services and aid to our producers, so that, you know, we understand where they're coming from, and we're trying to make sure that the money is distributed in a way that has the best impact.
It's been expressed from North Dakota Senator John Hoeven that there's more funding that's needed for the Quality Loss Adjustment and WIP Plus programs. If that's the case, where would that money show up, or how much more would be needed, and how does FSA get that?
It's hard to put a figure exactly on that, because WIP Plus considered previous years. One of the challenges that we faced is that the Quality Loss Assistance Program was funded from the same pot of money. So in order to do any of the payments except for the first 50% payment that the producers received for WIP Plus, we had to gather up all of the applications for Quality Loss Assistance Program so that we could see how far that money would go and apply a factor to that so that we could equitably distribute that money. With regard to the president's discretionary budget, I am not in charge of the president's discretionary budget or those conversations, but I know there have been conversations and questions from the Hill about would more appropriations be needed to meet that second 50% of WIP and continue WIP into 2020. So those are all policy questions that continue to play out. It's a good question, though.
Do you know what the interest is in the Quality Loss Adjustment program and that, I guess, the status of getting those WIP Plus applications processed?
Let me make sure I'm reading the right piece of paper here. As of April 5th, we've accepted 29,260 applications for the Quality Loss Adjustment Program. Sign-up began on January 6th, and I believe we've closed that sign-up period now, and we're just cleaning up what's known as our register. That's where we take people's names and information down, provided they call in by the deadline, and then we can follow up, because usually there's a rush right there at the deadline time. As of April 7th, with regard to WIP Plus, we've had 213,776 applications, and we've got $2.1 billion in payments out the door or in process.
It's just the remaining half of 2019 payments in WIP Plus that are pending, correct? Or
yeah.
We're waiting on more money for. Okay.
And I would, you know, it's not automatic that it's going to be half. Producers got the first 50% with the understanding that we had to continue to take applications. QLA got put in there. So the next payment might not be all of that 50%.
What other things are you working on with the Farm Service Agency right now?
There was a program rolled out called the American Rescue Plan, and there's a provision in there that provides loan payments to socially disadvantaged producers to try to provide them some economic assistance that they weren't really party to in the last year, and then beyond that with the trade assistance that happened in the previous administration. So our goal is to try to get loan payments to some of these producers that are among some of the most economically vulnerable in the nation.
I think I heard that South Dakota was among some of the highest interest in socially disadvantaged loan programs. Is that true? Do you know?
They are, for the Great Plains and the northern tier of states, they're probably one of the highest in number. There's a lot through Texas, Oklahoma, and over across the South. There's a lot of socially disadvantaged producers there as well who have been able to crack into those farm loan programs. And just to give you a little information about the eligibility for that program.
Do you know in South Dakota how that breaks down? We talk about socially disadvantaged farmers and getting clear on what that means.
Well, and I think part of the challenge here is that the definition in the American Rescue Plan is tied back to a previous definition in the Farm Bill that includes American Indians, Alaskan Natives, African American farmers, Asian American and Pacific Islanders, or individuals that have Latino or Hispanic ethnicity. So that is a definition that was set out by Congress, so there's nothing that we can do about that. Now, the eligible borrowers either have a Farm Service Agency direct loan, and that can be any of our direct loans, farm ownership, farm operating, micro loan, youth loans, or a FSA guaranteed loan with a commercial lender or a farm credit cooperative or even a CDFI, or one of the farm storage facility loans that we offer with CCC funding.
Do you know when the state executive directors will be named?
That's a real good question, and that is something that is a presidential appointment. And as you can imagine, there are many, many presidential appointments that are being considered right now. I would point out that as of this time in the previous administration, we didn't even have a Secretary of Agriculture. So we're way ahead of the game with Secretary Vilsack back in the office and doing the job. And I know that those candidates for state executive directors are being vetted as we speak in different areas.
I also wonder.
We're also looking for state committee members as well. So, if anybody out there listening is interested, please turn your resume in and let's see if we can get you to help us do some of the policy work.
Did you have previous FSA experience, like working on one of those committees at all before you joined the as administrator?
You'll get a kick out of this. Most of my previous FSA experience has been hollering around at them from the outside, telling them how they should do things in the loan program. My previous experience is with the professional experiences with the Intertribal Agriculture Council, a nonprofit that's charged with working with all of the federally recognized tribes and Alaska Native villages to enhance their economic development options through agriculture and access to USDA programs.
How interesting. What would you want to see changed when we talk about socially disadvantaged farmers and being more equitable at USDA? What would you want to see different other than what we've talked about in this interview? Is there anything else that I've missed?
I think first and foremost is to build trust or rebuild trust in cases where that it's been tarnished for whatever reason. You know, there are cases in Oklahoma where Native Americans who maybe don't look like the stereotypical Native American have checked the white box on their AD 2047 form because they felt it gave them a better chance to participate in our programs in the past. And we had a question from one of our staff members there, and they asked, what do we do when they want to come in and designate Indian? And I said, well, first, we need to think about the past 4 or 5 decades of service that may have led someone to feel like they need to disavow their heritage to participate in the programs, and set to putting a different face on our programs so that everybody feels welcome and as though they have a fair shot.
Is there anything else you'd like to say before I let you go?
Just a couple of things. You know, we're really excited about trying to make the FSA a valuable tool in moving the president and the secretary's initiatives around equity, recovery for the pandemic, improving climate smart agriculture opportunities, and rebuilding our local and regional food systems. And I am a huge fan of the Farm Service Agency loan programs, in spite of all of my griping about them in the past. It's still the best game in town, and I think we need to build more opportunities like that for all of our ag producers, not just our socially disadvantaged producers, because you and I are both aware that this isn't an economic runaway for anybody in the ag industry. We're receiving anywhere from 9 to 13 cents of the food dollar. We have to work off the farm so that we can provide basic needs of our family, like health insurance. And Secretary Vilsack is committed to helping us build a reality where we can get back to a strong family farm economy that will then serve as the economic background of our rural communities. And this is really important. You know, we get a lot of questions from the countryside. When are we going to be back to 100% at the FSA? And what people don't realize is that in our modified posture, where we're taking COVID precautions, limiting visitors, limiting the number of staff that we have in offices, we're functioning at well over 100% capacity. We've delivered all of our standing programs to a T, and we have also delivered a lot of ad hoc programs in the CARES Act and the Consolidated Appropriations Act. CFAB didn't exist till last spring, but our staff got that out the door. And it's important to know that your dedicated county and state office staff are supported by headquarters staff that are in this office 12 hours a day, every single day, working for all of us.
It's at 50% capacity currently, isn't it, for workers in county offices?
Yes, it depends on the county, and I may get this wrong, so don't quote me or beat me up over it. If we have more than 10 cases per 10,000 in that county, we take them back to 25%. If they are less than 10% cases, or 10 cases per 10,000, I'm sorry, 10 cases per 10,000, then they can go to 50% and accept visitors on a appointment basis.
Are you getting a sense, and I know the White House has made an exception for FSA to even move up from 25% to 50%. Do you get a sense of when that could continue to increase and move even greater?
Really no indication, because if as we look at the CDC maps, there are a lot of counties that are red and getting redder. So our hope is that as a nation, we can come together and take the steps that are necessary, including getting vaccinated and wearing your mask where you go. We can get ahead of this, and then we can get back to business as usual.